Hello, everybody. Pre-show for Craft Beer Radio.
That's what we're calling it these days.
It is, yes. I met a listener last night. Down at Rex's house, you know, Rex from the, up the street, case exchange type thing. That's where I got all those IPAs that are sitting by the front door. And, you know, one of his former coworkers, like, oh, yeah, I listen to Inns.
Well, there you go.
So, she's started from the beginning. She hasn't caught up yet, so she's listening to, like, three-year-old Jeff and Greg.
Yeah.
Or 3 years younger.
It was a different show back then, for sure.
Yep. So how was your week? Mine sucked pretty big donkey balls.
Yeah, let's talk about why yours sucked.
Heartbleed. You've heard about it on the news. Now, you may have heard the right news, you may have heard the wrong news, you may have heard slightly exaggerated, you might have heard some truthy hyperbole from someone who's not lending themselves to hyperbole.
Well, so let me explain my understanding of it, because I'm not a security professional, right? But this is the OpenSSL code. So this is the GNU, the free source code that has been used for a while by lots of different sites. Amazon.
Technically, it's not GNU.
It's not GNU? Okay. No. But it's open source.
Yes.
Amazon, Netflix, definitely. Google used it, right? Facebook used it. And what somebody, I guess 2 years ago, somebody inserted a piece of code for essentially a keep alive to the servers, right? So
yeah, the it's a heartbeat,
right?
Keep alive, and it's primarily would be used in the case where, now to explain why, probably gets too deep, so I'll just say it and maybe we'll get into it, but probably not. There's two kinds of internet protocol. There's TCP and UDP.
Right.
TCP does transport reliability as part of the protocol. It checks to make sure the connections are open, things like that, as part of TCP. So you really don't need a keep alive for SSL over TCP. But UDP doesn't. So you might think, why would you want to use UDP? You could use it for low latency things. Or if you're doing VPN tunnels, you don't want to have TCP inside of TCP because they're both trying to do reliability and that can cause slowdowns. So you would typically put your VPN over UDP. But there's none of, you know, so that's why they built this keep alive into the protocol layer, right? The encryption security layer. So it's a thing that runs under UDP. So
essentially what you would do is you would send it something saying, hey, keep me alive. Here's a string of numbers and this is how many numbers I've sent you. And it would take the code, say, all right, yes, I got you. I'm sending you back the same amount of numbers, the same amount of characters that you sent me. But what you could do with it is say, here, keep me alive. I'm sending you a very tiny piece of data, but I want as much data as you can get back.
Well, I mean, a great example, if you saw the XKCD cartoon, they described it very well. It'd be a keep alive, like, hi, my message is cat, 3 letters, right? Mm-hmm. Hi, my message is fish, 5 letters.
Right.
Four letters. No, I was spelling
it the
band. Yeah, 5 letters. Yeah. Hi, my message is dog. 65,000 letters.
Right.
And then the code. The code is, you know, all these vulnerabilities are super clear in hindsight, but the code basically was copy this piece of memory to that piece of memory, and the size, use that thing that the untrusted third party told you to use. Don't vet the actual size received.
Right. Yeah.
So this causes you've probably heard of buffer overflows. And what this is overflowing into more memory space. So the beginning of the message you sent is cat, right? And then there's 64,999, you know, roughly, bytes of memory after that it's also going to return.
That could be anywhere. It could be anything.
It could be anything, but it also could be and has been proven to be things like the server's SSL key, which is very important not to let the bad guys know for several reasons. It could be credentials of people who have recently logged into the website.
Right.
They were able to catch that. It could be credentials of people who have recently logged on to the Instant Messenger service. That's the one vulnerability that we had open that I had to patch. And so patching the vulnerability, I told Greg my week was hell because of Heartbleed. Patching the vulnerability and was easy, right? I mean, it was super easy. The patch was out there. On Red Hat based Linux distros, there's a thing called yum, and you just say yum update, and it updates all the packages that are available. And since it was already in the package stream, it just updated. So no longer vulnerable. But now there's the potential of all the data that had been bled off of my server, the SSL key, right? So I had to rekey my SSL certificate for the Jabber server. And then what was the, you know, so I had to go through and do an analysis of what could have been lost, right? Everyone who logged into the Jabber server, their credentials could have been compromised. So I had to force a password change for everyone. And then, you know, Google was vulnerable. So I had to force a password change for everyone's Google account. Mm-hmm. And, you know, had to tell people to change their Salesforce passwords and had to tell people to do this and that and the other thing. And, yeah, it just got... Luckily, most of our services, all of our services that our customers use to download software, to send stats back to us, things like that, they were all running an older version of OpenSSL that wasn't vulnerable. So it was just the Jabber server and this one HTTPS redirector that I had set up that bounced you from here to another site. Mm-hmm. And so I had to rekey that too. But other than that, but it was still a hellish week. I mean, just all this stuff, you know, just helping everyone, because all the salespeople, all the non-technical staff, you know, even something as simple as a password change. Because it's not just changing your password. Then all your applications need to know your new password.
Yeah.
And Apple must not QA password changes. You wouldn't believe my biggest problem was Apple Mail would prompt you for the new password. They would type it in, hit OK, and it wouldn't work. Apple wouldn't use the new password until you go into the keychain manager, delete, and you'll go into the keychain manager, and instead of just one password being saved for Apple Mail, you'll see like 15 that are like all probably the same old password. Uh-huh. And you have to delete all those manually, and then Apple will finally honor your new password. And iCal, the same thing. iCal, it will prompt you, you put in the password, it won't take it. Prompt you, put in the password, it won't take it. Fucking bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Heartbleed is a pretty big deal. It was in the code for 2 years, like Greg said. Now, it also doesn't leave any trace in standard levels of logging because it's just a TCP protocol connection. So unless you're keeping
packets,
this TCP or UDP, Heartbleed's available on both. I was explaining what it would be useful for before, but yeah, so not very many people have packet logs. There was a story out the other day on ours saying that, you know, a guy had seen a couple malformed packets, you know, like several months ago that may or may not have been, you know, a Heartbleed attack. But, you know, so before Tuesday, you know, I think it's pretty likely the NSA was in there, you know, able to Heartbleed things. Maybe other governments. Maybe one or two crime organizations, but I mean, it wasn't on the dark net, right? Like, no, keeping something like that secret is you're not selling it, right? You're not, you know, Krebs would have known about it if it was out on the dark net. But after Tuesday, they announced it, you know, and there's code out there to check your site and everything. So now it's a frantic race, right?
Yeah.
Because the bad guys just want to snarf down, they want to bleed as much data as they can. So they're going to set up botnets to start finding vulnerable sites and bleeding data off of them. The good guys are rushing to fix their problems, right? It's so, you know, it's just a frantic race. Google actually got some shit because the Google researcher discovered it. Google patched and updated all their certs prior to disclosure. I wouldn't be pissed about that.
Well,
but
yeah, why would you?
I don't know because... I didn't see the argument. Someone told me about it, so this is all hearsay. But someone said Google was getting some shit for, you know, patching early.
Are we?
We weren't. I'll start it now.
It's the internet. Somebody's always going to complain about something. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't really surprise me that...
I've changed my password, you know, everywhere. And I changed my laptop screensaver unlock password for the first time in probably 3 years. And it's such a pain in the ass because my old password was so ingrained that it never, I think my spinal cord was probably unlocking my computer, right? It definitely wasn't the conscious part of my brain. Mm-hmm. You know, it was almost like swiping a fingerprint across the, you know, I just put my hands on the keys and my computer unlocks. You know, that's how automatic it was. And now, you know, I'm trying to learn this new password. I'll type in my old password 3 times before I realize what I'm doing, right? It's crazy. I mean, I find it stunning that it's so automatic. Like, I'm not throwing hyperbole around or, you know, exaggerating, saying that I think my spinal cord was unlocking my computer. So it just seems that way.
Back to the heart of the issue, what does this say about how we protect that? I mean, about the whole password paradigm itself. I mean, is there some conceivable thing better than passwords for security?
Yeah, there's things better than passwords. There can be things better than passwords. But this wasn't really passwords. This wasn't a problem with people. This wasn't a password database getting loose.
Yeah, right. No, right? I understand.
So this is different. I mean, if we were talking about a password database getting loose, then we start talking about things better than passwords. This one, yeah, we can still talk about it, right? But the Heartbleed's not the impetus for that, so...
Heartbleed is not the impetus for, I mean, in terms of from a security perspective and from what it did, nothing to do with passwords. But the fact that everybody has to now update their passwords brings passwords back into people's minds, right? Because now every site is telling you update your password on everything, essentially. So we still have, so for the public, for the general public, the people who are not, you know, doing security research and not mm-hmm. really caring about the SSL security. You know, so they're concerned with, now I have to get a whole new password and remember this whole new password and they're going to basically make one password for all their sites, right?
I mean, you're a LastPass user, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
I do generate, so yeah.
That's the key. I mean, you need to find a good tool. LastPass isn't the only one. LastPass does it the best. And it's a tool. It runs in your browser, and it detects username and password boxes and helps you do it right. If you already have a record saved in LastPass for the site, it autofills it. It could even auto log you in, right? Mm-hmm. If it's on a computer you trust and it's a site you go to often, you can just go to the site. It'll type in your username, your password, and hit login. Mm-hmm. You know, and so the first thing you actually do when you go to the site is you're already logged in. When you go to a new site or when you change your password, it gives you a UI to help generate a password. Right. And I've probably said this on the air before, but I only know 3 of my passwords. I know my LastPass password. You have to know that one to get into LastPass. I know my work password because I'm SSHing to a lot of boxes.
And things then like let that. Me guess the other one is your Apple password.
I know my Apple password because you have to type it into your phone so damn much. Mm-hmm. And you don't want it. I just can't have my Apple password being some unknown or even truly random. It's one of my weakest passwords, right? Yeah. My Apple password is one of my weakest passwords. Still a good password, I think, but it's one of my weakest passwords because it's not random noise. So all my passwords are between 8 and 12 characters, and they're just a random mix of lowercase, uppercase numbers and punctuation. And so say you hit a site that has some stupid restriction and it can't handle hyphens, underscores, at signs, and pound signs, right? You can take those out and generate a password. You could make that password not use special characters. If 12 is too long, you could change it to 8 just for that one. But you don't have to remember any of those special rules. Because before I started using LastPass, I had an algorithm for my thing, right?
Yeah.
Where I would kind of take part of the website's domain name, and then I would use some geography tricks on the keyboard to kind of scramble it. And it turns out that lots of hackers will already employ those tricks, and that really doesn't help at all, that keyboard geography thing. So, you know, all my passwords are away from that now. I guess it's better than nothing, but it turns out, you know, all the crackers, you know, will use certain geography tricks to try to figure out what the person's password is. So, like, you know, above... Like, so let's use his first name, but let's move the keys up one row. You know, they'll try all kinds of things like that.
Okay, so what about, so what would you say is a better thing than passwords? I mean, biometric is obviously one thing, right? But we've talked about before how that can be either mimicked or problematic in certain circumstances.
I'm sorry, I have to type something here. So
okay.
So if you can just carry the conversation.
Yes. So
there's a work thing developing that I hopefully don't have to abort for, but that's what I'm working on now.
All right. I mean, to me, it comes back to the. It may have a similar thing to the whole CAPTCHA question, which is the CAPTCHAs. Those are those things where you fill out. There's a picture or like a string of numbers, and there's some colors or lines in the background, and it says, you know, type in these numbers. This is to verify that you're a person, because the computer itself can't, or at least the idea is that computers can't easily read that, but humans can. So, is there some sort of CAPTCHA method that people can use for passwords that's easy to remember but hard to break? I guess it's kind of a P equals NP problem to a certain extent.
I only heard... I mean, the thing you're talking about CAPTCHAs is kind of good. You wouldn't really want to just solve CAPTCHAs. But Steve Gibson, you know, the guy does the Security Now podcast, he is working on, and I've only heard what he's had to say about it. I haven't read any independent stuff. It seems like it's a pretty good system. He's calling it Squirrel, SQRL. It's secure QR code login. And the way that works is there is, I can't talk it all through, but the websites can employ the, they show you a QR code, mm-hmm. and you shoot it with your phone, and then it logs you in. Right. And the crypto and everything seems pretty solid. And I can't speak to how the crypto works. It's been too long since he's talked about it. When I heard it described, I'm like, that, you know, it sounded really slick. The sites don't need to know anything. It can be anonymous too, right? You could have a squirrel identity that isn't tied to Greg Weiss. So you could have a login to a site, you know, all the stuff. It doesn't just get rid of passwords. It also gets rid of usernames. Right, you click the site, it shows you a QR code, you click it, and the transaction through the phone internet loop, right, lets user X, you are absolutely user X here, log in, right? And some sites will have identities tied to those, other ones might not have ones, right?
So problems that I can see with Comet is, you know, if your phone is out of power, you lose your phone, suddenly you can't log into anything.
Yeah. I mean, there's things about that, but, you know, two-factor authentication uses a phone loop for a lot of things. You know, I can't get on my VPN without my phone. I can't log into Google without my phone. Or I can't log into Google from a new device without my phone. It is a level of inconvenience, but it sure is a hell of a lot better than having some dude in, you know, Russia logging into your Google account, right?
But if some dude in Russia has your phone...
Well, some dude in Russia is not very likely to get your phone, right? Where if it's just a password, they can just start brute forcing your password, right? They don't have to obtain there's different factors in authentication, right? There's something you know, which is your password. Then there's something you are, which is biometrics, you know, retina or fingerprint. And then there's something you have, and that is not necessarily your phone, but a cryptographic token predictably changing with a secret that only the site knows, kind of thing like that. And the multi-factor apps on your phone act just like those old key fobs from VeriSign or whatnot, right?
Yeah.
So it's something you have that always changes predictably. And, I mean, sure, you could lose your phone. Someone could steal your phone. The odds of you getting breached by someone wanting to steal your phone is infinitesimal compared to the odds of one of your passwords getting hacked. Yeah, Greg's showing his BattleNet one. Yeah, it's the same thing. I'll show you real quick here. We use Duo Security at work. So, like, I have a whole slew of, cryptographic ones here. All the way from Amazon Web Services. I even have a Microsoft two-factor turned on. Dropbox, you know, anything I can. It's all in the one app. So.
Is it a 5? I thought you had a
4, 4S.
I thought you had a 5.
No, Heather has a 5.
Oh.
Or a 5S. I don't know what she has. 5S, I think. What the Touch
one
ID.
The fingerprint. Yeah. That's 5S.
Yeah. No, I have a 4S.
Mm-mm.
Haven't upgraded yet.
So, should we move on to other topics, or... Are you okay work-wise?
We're still okay. I was just answering some questions for one of the ops guys. Temperature's high, but holding steady. We had a chiller problem at work today. If it would have happened on a weekday, it would have been like no big deal. It would have happened on the nicest Saturday ever. And we're doing the cooling on the computer room frugally, you know, so we accepted the limitations of single point of failure, things like that, and having some fail safes in to shut down equipment before it burns up, or worst case, sets off the sprinklers, right?
Right.
And it got up to 114 degrees in the, so I was at soccer, at least for a soccer game, say. So I was at soccer. On the way home, I get a phone call from Justin, who was out of town, saying, you know, have you seen these alerts? And I actually hadn't, so it was good he called me. By the time I got back here, it was at 114 degrees, and I knew I had a failsafe in to shut off, but I couldn't remember what the threshold was. It was actually 115, but I logged in and threw the switch myself, right? And just started shedding power in the room, shut down everything but essential systems. And eventually I was trying to figure out what to do. Like, never had really had a contingency plan on, like, yeah, what we do. I'm like, and finally I realized, I guess I just got to go in and see what's up, because I realized we had 24/7, 365 service on the chiller and stuff like that. So the right thing to do was go in. So I went in, and it was in a offline mode, and I went on Google and found out how to reset it. So I reset it, and then I called the air conditioning company. They came and checked it out, didn't see anything was wrong. But like I said, it's running warm right now, and so I have to keep a close eye on it, make sure it doesn't go offline again. It looks like it's actually running. I don't know why it's running, 7 or 8 degrees warmer than it should be, but
as long as it stays there.
Well, yeah, actually it's a little, it's okay that I don't like have to go down there in the middle of the night, but it's warmer than we want it to be, right, for normal operations.
Understandable. So, Pittsburgh was in the news recently.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Lovely to have the town in the news. A knifing attack, of all things.
Yeah,
How does that make you feel? You have kids.
I'm pretty rational when it comes to odds and statistics, yeah, right? So I'm not too worried. It doesn't scare me, mm-hmm, Being that it happened once so close to us, it's never going to happen again in town, at least not in the next 20 years.
Right.
Or the odds are so low, then there's so many schools and so many hallways and so many classrooms that I'm not too worried about it, affecting my children. It's really surprising. Now, I've heard some of the stories afterhand, and they kind of set it up to be pretty successful. But, you have these guys with guns, and they call them massacres when, like, 4 people get hurt, right? It's pretty amazing that some kid with a knife, like, hurt, like, 30 kids.
Yes, but none of them died.
Two are in pretty bad shape.
Two are in pretty bad shape. None of them died.
Yeah.
Somebody goes in with a gun, mm-hmm, lots of people get killed.
Right.
So there is a difference for those who are saying,
but like,
are you going to ban knives now? And it's like, there is a difference. But let's be fair.
Yeah. I'm just saying most gun attacks, like, only are like 2 or 3,
Yes.
Right. It's not like, now, some of the recent ones are kind of,
The Adam Lanza type ones, yeah, are big time, but and the Columbine, remember?
Very, very successful, yeah, in their goal. More than, like, because I remember growing up, like, the Valentine's Day Massacre, and you, like, hear the title, you're like, oh, dozens or hundreds of people died, but it was, like, 8 people. Why don't they use why don't they use massacre anymore?
Because massacre is, it implies massive, right? It implies a massive amount, and you hear massacre, you think hundreds of people,
mm-hmm, or at least dozens, right?
Yeah,
a dozen or more, or 2 dozen or more, something, yeah, like that. Yeah, like, I'm gonna have to look up the exact number for St. Valentine's Day, but yeah, it's not a big number.
Mm-hmm. Well, when people have their illusions punctured, it's always something.
It was 7 people.
7 people.
Same
that's a lot of people. I mean, maybe massacre is a little a little too strong, but that's a lot of people.
And they were all mob associates, so, like, who cares? But, yeah, so, like, when I found that, like, that was, like, seven people, like, huh? That doesn't fit the name. Mm.
I just saw a really good movie. It's a 2011 movie with Gary Oldman. Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, based on the John le Carré novel. Really, from what I understand, it's sort of a pared-down version of the novel, which is a lot of... There's a lot of stuff going on in the novel, and a lot of plot, and they sort of pared it down. But what really made this great is the mood. The mood of the movie was so well done, and it's one of those movies where you're watching it's about 2 hours. You're watching it end, like 2 hours 10 minutes. You're watching it end for the first hour. You're kind of not sure what the hell's going on.
Yeah, I started to watch the movie, but it was, like, late. I was tired. And it really starts out slow. And, I never actually went back to it. I've been meaning to watch it. I've heard good things about it. But
and it's one of those where it reminds you of sort of, like, The Wire, how the first six episodes, mm-hmm. like, what the fuck is going on?
Right.
By about halfway through, it kind of starts to come together. And when there's, like, when there's about 45 minutes left, you are so on board.
Okay.
So, you have to pay attention because they don't, they are totally trusting your intelligence. They are saying, keep up with us because we're not going to stop for you. We know you can keep up with us, mm-hmm. keep up with us. And it works. It works great. And it was a really, okay. really great
cool.
movie.
Cool. I'll have to go back and check that out. Have you heard about Particle Fever?
The movie, right? Yeah.
About the LHC.
Higgs, yeah.
Yeah. LHC and the Higgs. I've heard pretty good things. It's actually showing next week down at Regent Square.
Really?
I was hoping that there would be like an afternoon matinee. I could kind of just, since I'm all halfway down there, I could duck out and see it. But it doesn't, on weeknights, it doesn't show till 8. Mm-hmm. But I've heard really good things, how it's a really engaging documentary. It actually has a lot of soul to it, and whatnot. So I've heard.
Yeah, I mean, you can make interesting documentaries about mm-hmm. topics that would otherwise be pretty boring.
Mm-hmm.
If there's an artistry to it. So
yeah, so I might try to. I'll let you know if I try to like line up and go get down there and do it. Because you'd probably be interested in it as well. When's Greg getting here?
What?
Greg.
I think next weekend, right? I think it's next weekend. I believe.
Right around, it's
on the 18th or so.
Yeah, he's 18th, 19th, 18th and 19th. So he's leaving right before Easter.
Yeah.
Damn atheist.
One of us. speaking of atheists, there's a good atheist joke on Community this week. John Oliver talking about how tweeting Save Greendale.
That's right.
People follow me for my atheistic rants and pictures of food, not for such triviality.
I almost, I think I watched it before you. It sounded like you did all your tweets much later in the evening.
I was composing my thoughts. Oh, okay. It's one of those ones where you just have to watch it again.
Mm-hmm. So I watched the first act, right? I'm like, this first act is written for Greg, right? And then when the John Oliver line came up, I almost retweeted, yep, for Greg. But I didn't think that just the yep for Greg would, really tie in, so I didn't waste the...
Well, I mean, the first act was written for Harmon, and I get all, all my story stuff came from me reading, through, mm-hmm. came through Dan Harmon and then me reading other material.
So you said you love the atonement with the father. Was that the scene where Abed was talking to Beard Abed?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
So, Abed goes on his... There was lots of little things about the story circle, but obviously Abed's calling out the call to adventure.
Yeah.
The refusal of the call. He goes out with Jeff, crosses that threshold of going, actually crossing through the threshold, going out the door with Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
you know, starts on the journey of not getting a story, tries to escape the story. That's his road of trials, mm-hmm. right? He basically talks to the camera and says the answer is in the teacher's lounge. It cuts to teachers on nothing's going on, and then it cuts to him running away from the camera.
I missed that part. I mean, yeah. Now that you said it, but yeah. I'm like, oh, like I didn't get the whole teacher's lounge, but he's trying to get the camera to look away,
right? So he's finally gotten to the point where he thinks he's got it. He's met with the guy. He's abandoned his story, and then it hits him that the camera finds him. He's like, no, I can't get away. I can't get away. And then his father shows up, Father Ovid, and says, you have to keep fighting. You know, you have to keep going. Make it not a story. Cross that again. So then it goes mm-hmm. to him. He then uses that to cross his shoulder, finally purges it, you know, gets the whole Leonard telling unsubscribe, mm-hmm. gets it out of his mind, gets to the point where he is saying, okay, I've cleared it. There's no more stories. And that's when the story starts mm-hmm. of the story of the episode starts.
Right.
So it was really, I mean, if you like that story progression thing, it was wonderful. If you have no idea what that's about, that would completely confuse you.
It would. I mean, yeah, if you weren't listening to Harmon's podcast or our Crafty Radio's post shows, which is a close proxy of Harmon's podcast from Greg. I'm not sure what someone who's not on the inside would think of that.
Yeah, well, clearly from what I've seen, a lot of people were just like, what the hell is going on?
I mean, yeah, if you'd, you know, like, I was loving it because I was, you know, it was inside baseball for me, you know, because you had told me the whole thing. And I'm like, you know, the parts I remembered, I'm like, oh, yeah. Wow. And it was, you know, but yeah, I couldn't imagine. It's like hearing, you know, Another One Bites the Dust for the first time backwards.
Right. But the whole episode was so layered. There were really three different layers. One was a community episode about what was happening. Another layer was a sort of meta layer about storytelling. And there was another layer where the whole community episode itself was about how the networks and Sony treat community. Because the whole idea was, you know, the community finally gets to the point where it's been just a drag on Sony
mm-hmm, right.
for, you know, 3 years or whatever. They finally get to the point where, okay, now we can sell it. We can sell it in syndication. What do we do? All right, well, let's just get rid of everything that makes it that makes it good and just, you know, fill in with nonsense because we can finally sell it. So who the hell cares? And that's what they did in season mm-hmm. four. Right. And so it's an analog for exactly what happens. And you have the executives walking around with the guys at money, you know, saying first they're saying, you know, we love it. And then, mm-hmm. and then they also say, but you can dynamite it if you want. And it's like, I thought you said you loved it. Well, we love its potential.
I didn't even get that whole tie in there it's very, very funny. $5. What do you call your buns if they're not buns?
I'm surprised you didn't say loaves.
Bread. What are your individual units? Breads?
And then, of course, the arc of the... Because this is two-parter, so the arc of the story actually sort of ends at their... ends at sort of the meeting with the goddess of mm-hmm. finding the treasure map. And they're like, we found what we want. Buried treasure. Now I have to take it and mm-hmm. go back up and see, you know, see what that process is like.
Right.
Buried treasure. Which is, I mean, if you read sort of if you listen to some of the commentary, you know, what is... When you're trying to break a story, you're trying to figure out what is it that, you know, can get you across these. What is it that can motivate your characters to get through somewhere? And a common thing is some sort of MacGuffin, some easy thing. So when you're really breaking a story and you can't get past it, you invent something and then you'll come back to it. So mm-hmm. you say, oh, buried treasure. but they're just actually using buried treasure. It's sort of like a spit. It's sort of like a, just a first draft type thing. And they actually decide to, what the hell, buried treasure. It was really, really, it was a super meta episode. I can totally understand if people didn't get it. I was overjoyed with it. I would just
it was really good. I mean, yeah. I it's hard for me to see it from the outside. You know, you put me on the inside. You know, there were some great scenes where, you know, Craig's in his underwear crying in his office.
Yeah, I mean, it was also funny. That's the other thing that season four wasn't. Season four was sort of a copy of Harmon, but it also wasn't funny. Mm-hmm. This had good jokes in it at the same time as doing all that stuff. The stuff that the insurance inspector was saying mm-hmm. was very funny. And
yeah.
Yeah.
I want this stuff all on me. I want to be one of the four.
So, yeah, Community was great. Here's something. So we didn't talk much about the plane, the Malaysian plane.
Oh, yeah.
For a while, since it sort of,
we could just speculate. Maybe it was God. Black holes.
Well, one thing is, I think it's really cool how they found out that it was going on the southern track.
Mm-hmm.
The way they did that, by doing a Doppler analysis of the signals, that's pretty sweet. That's just really, really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think I'm trying to put myself back to when I first heard about the Doppler thing, because they kind of, so much time has passed, so much new information has been found. I can't remember where I was, but I remember thinking, I don't know, I'm probably fabricating it, so I'm not even going to say, but yeah, the Doppler, because they were able to look at the frequency and if it was flying the northern route, it would have been shifted at a different degree than the southern route or whatnot. It's very cool. What's the news over the last couple of days? I mean,
well, they've heard pings that they're pretty certain were from.
They lost it for a few days and they found it again.
Well, they're not sure they found it again. That fifth one, they actually don't think it was. Because, I mean, the batteries are almost dead on that thing anyway. So the idea that they'll be able to find any more pings is probably... It's not looking good, but at least they have it to around 500 square miles as opposed to 30,000 square miles. Mm-hmm. So that's better.
Right.
It's still about the size of Los Angeles. It's still a big area that's 1,500 feet underwater. 15,000 feet, I'm sorry. 15,000 feet underwater. What's interesting to me is that there's no debris.
Yeah,
I mean that there isn't a piece of debris. If
the plane ran out of gas and fell out of the sky, it's not going to land softly.
Almost certainly not, especially in choppy water. And you'd think that there would be, I understand a storm went through that area, so things could get thrown around. But you would think that at some point somebody would find something, a seat cushion or a luggage bag or a bra or a card, one of those safety cards, something that would have floated out from it. So the idea that the thing came down intact, then slowly sank.
It's pretty crazy, right?
It's really crazy.
I mean, they know that no life rafts were deployed because they have two-way GPS. So, they would have phoned home. And, it's nuts. I mean, I'm trying to, forget all the speculation stuff. It's there's nothing left to do but speculate until they find something. How the hell could it actually have landed and not broken up and not have debris? Again, it might be that whole... The world's a really big place, and everything we know about searching for lost things we learned on the movies and TV, and might be a lot bigger than we think it can be.
It's just weird that nothing. It just seems like something like that should break up. Stuff should be. Who knows? I mean, the other thing that we're learning is that the ocean is full of garbage. Because there are all those things where people mm-hmm. thought they thaw something and it just turned out to be garbage.
Mm-hmm.
So, yay. Yay us.
We'll find the plane floating around the Great Pacific garbage island right. thing.
Well, there it is. there was a... They authenticated that piece of papyrus from a couple... was a year or two ago. That was an old thing that where it said, Jesus said my wife. They authenticated that was from the 8th or 7th century. And, of course, that got me thinking of Comedy Bang Bang, which does overkill on the Borat thing for funny. For funny. For comedy. So, Jesus said, my wife! That would be like, it's the old, it's mm-hmm. the world's oldest Borat joke. Okay. Huxley versus Orwell. This is interesting.
Huxley versus Orwell. Okay.
I forget where I read it, but somebody, there was an interesting article slash graphic where it was somebody pointing out that today's world is much less Orwell than it is Huxley in terms of what the world is like. And so the idea was, you know, Orwell thought of there would be a massively oppressive state. Mm-hmm. And Huxley thought there would just be a state that gave you so many distractions that you wouldn't really be paying attention to what the heck was going on. Orwell said we would be, you know, we would be controlled by pain. Huxley said we would be controlled by pleasure. Orwell said that people would, the state would burn books so people wouldn't get ideas. Huxley said people would be so distracted by things they wouldn't bother to read books. It's all weighing into the mm-hmm. into the Huxley side from this.
It certainly is, isn't it?
Yeah, we all have our Twitters and we have mm-hmm. Our Reddits and other things that we do and podcasts.
Mm-hmm. Podcasts, yeah. We're educating the masses here.
We're part of the problem.
But we're talking about the problem. So.
Yes, exactly. So that helps, right?
Yes. Don't read a book, you damn hippies.
Books are dumb. That's just talking about a movie based on a book. Go watch the movie instead. Oh.
It's easier to digest.
Mm. Yeah. Well, that's all I have for right now.
Okay. Yeah, I think we can. It looks like the temperature's holding fairly steady, and it's higher than normal threshold. I wish I knew why. I wish I had a more complete system down there that like actually had monitoring on it. You know, it's just as basically, it's this portable chiller, right? Just air conditioning. You roll into a room. So there's like no reporting or anything on it. Just other than looking at it. I should have set up a camera.
What would that do?
Well, set up a webcam. Watch the front panel. See if it's on.
Okay. Yeah. I guess you'd do that.
All right. So yeah, let's go get some beers.